The Security Council resolution adopted Friday calls for a UN peacekeeping force to supplement the Lebanese army as a buffer between Israeli forces and Hezbollah fighters. The latest Security Council effort to broker a Middle East peace settlement comes as the United Nations is reaching a crossroads. The organization is more than 60 years old. It took form in the years immediately following World War II and survived the Cold War. The United Nations now finds itself in a new geopolitical era, one which has brought widespread calls for reform of the world body. Secretary General Kofi Annan has commissioned a comprehensive review of how the United Nations functions, but he is expected to leave his post this January at the end of his second five-year term, and no successor has been named. Ruth Wedgwood is a professor of international law and diplomacy at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies and a member of the UN Human Rights Committee. Thanks for your time. Thanks for coming in. The United Nations was founded with the hope that it would prevent future global conflicts. Can it be called a success?
In one sense, it's failed, in that it was never, it was designed to be a collective security pact. It was designed to be a kind of worldwide NATO. Even if you read the language of the Charter, Chapter 7, it doesn't function the way it was supposed to. Chapter 7 supposed that there'd be a UN army, that countries would give troops to the automatic disposition of the Security Council, that there'd be a UN Air Force, if you can believe, that there would really be a robust combat force available to really continue the United Nations alliance of the World War II allies. And that just didn't come to pass because of the Cold War. So what you have instead is a Security Council that tries to use a kind of political signaling, a show of strength by the concurrence of votes, and then at times will authorize the use of force, but has to hope for volunteers to fill out that force. And that's one of the problems in relying upon it as an automatic security guarantee.
The UN has been frequently criticized for failing to stop great human tragedies, the Rwanda genocide of 1994, or for that matter, the current crisis in Darfur. What, if anything, do you think can be done to make the UN more effective in preventing these sorts of events?
Well, there have been many reform proposals. Lakhdar Brahimi, who was quite an innovative Algerian, he proposed in the late 90s that there be a startup fund so that it wouldn't take months and months to assemble a force, that you'd have a better way to marry up troops and equipment. But truth to tell, I think there's no legal mechanism that automatically abolishes geopolitics. And to put together a force for Darfur or Rwanda or, frankly, for Lebanon, you've got to get the politics right, and countries have to care. And then there's the international problem. One's hopeful, for example, that this really can work in Lebanon, to have a combined force of Turks, French, and Australians, each of whom are pretty robust kind of soldiers, but none of them speak the language. So to try to find out where Hezbollah is hiding, you're going to have to rely on the Lebanese army, which in turn will rely on Lebanese politics.
Well, many of the reforms that have been proposed for the United Nations have to do with governance and control issues. And the UN's basic mission has been to work for world peace. Do you think its mission simply should be to work as a global relief organization and leave the peacekeeping efforts to ad hoc international committees? Or coalitions,
they're ad hoc anyway, if you will. So this is kind of the village pump in the middle of the square where people assemble to be ad hoc. And some people find it easier to contribute troops to the UN than they would to NATO, certainly to a U.S.-led coalition. I have to say, since I spend 10 weeks a year on my committee, we do in a patient way a review of country reports every 3 times a year for 3 weeks each, and hear about 12, 15 countries a year, file reports on women's rights, prison conditions, police violence, right to speak out, right to vote, the whole bevy of civil and political rights. And one hopes, for example, that a country cohort that's coming to town to talk to us includes the interior minister or the deputy police chief, so you can talk right to the person who might want to hear from the horse's mouth how it looks from the outside. And I'm sure many countries find it irksome and not a pleasant experience. Dentists never are. But still, it's good to hear from the outside how you seem, even if countries don't always agree with us.
Ruth Wedgwood is a professor of international law and diplomacy at the Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies and a member of the UN Human Rights Committee. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.